You're listening to The Point. In a few minutes, we hear the story of a 75-year-old woman who leaves New York City for Cape Cod to pursue her dream of acting and writing. But first, despite the many people and organizations who work to make our region an inviting place to live and visit, there is a segment of the population who call Cape Cod home, but without the benefit of a dwelling. Hyannis has one of the Cape's largest homeless populations. Producer Lucy Kang takes a closer look.
This is one way to go in. I'll go this way.
Bo Chu has been homeless for years. He takes me to his tent campsite. It's his one-man sanctuary in the woods, not far from the main road. We skirt a chain-link fence and walk down a dirt path.
And you feel safe with me, right? Okay, good. I feel safe with you.
There's a hidden world that few will visit in Hyannis. It's in the nooks and crannies, on the streets and in the woods. I wanted to see it and meet the people who live there. Yes, there is violence, mental illness, substance abuse, and trauma. But in 5 short days, I discovered humor, ingenuity, love, and even a sense that, despite being homeless, the Cape itself is home.
That's it.
Is this home for you?
That's the back entrance, yeah. And as you can see, I am very pristine. tongue in cheek.
Among the trees and brambles, Bo has strung up a large gray tarp to protect him from the weather. Things are sprawled everywhere. Shoes of different sizes, a broken bicycle rickshaw, jackets, and even neckties. Bo says he's kind of a loner and prefers it that way. He sleeps here by himself.
Do you get nervous about being here at night?
No, I'm aligned with Source, and so I have great peace and security.
So you like living next to nature?
In nature, and don't feel like I'm next to nature. I think I'm in nature. I think I'm even part of it.
This is a makeshift world for makeshift lives. It takes resourcefulness and maybe even a little imagination to live this way. Alleys are bedrooms. And dumpsters?
This is my dumpster. I'm a dumpster diver. So I'm going to stop in here. But they cleaned it out. Looks like a fish head. I might try to get it later. I might not.
Do you, like, generally know who everyone is?
I know a lot of people.
Do you know Turtle?
Yes. Oh, you interviewed Turtle for two hours. Good. Okay, that was you.
Hi, my name is Carlton Parknett, but my friends call me Turtle.
Why did they call you Turtle?
Because I fight like a teenage Ninja Turtle, and when I get lonely, I go inside my shell and watch TV.
Turtle's dressed in military fatigues. He wears a camouflage vest with countless pockets and carries a water canteen. He's dressed for the outdoors.
And I've been camping out all my life as a Native American, Wampanoag. Ever since a little boy, my mother would bring me camping. I know how to be outside. So a lot of people think it's hard, but it's easy for me because I've done it all my life.
Like a lot of people I met, Turtle has lived a troubled life. There's substance abuse and a marriage that went bad. His son was killed a few months ago, stabbed to death in a convenience store. It's obvious the pain is still raw. But there's pride when he insists that he chose to live this way.
I made this choice. I wanted to live on the street. Before I was homeless, I used to own my own house. And now I just flipped the script and it's like it was just too much money to pay for a house and bills. Why pay for all that when you're living in God's living room with all God's people, you know what I mean?
Depending on the day, Turtle walks between a constellation of places. The church, the emergency shelter, the Salvation Army, and Bay Bridge, a clubhouse for people with mental illness. But still, Turtle sometimes has trouble finding a place to clean up.
Some of us have to wash up like birds. I go to the shelter, I'll go to the bus station, I'll find a spigot and wash up, brush my teeth, shave. I'll use car mirrors to shave. You got to improvise.
Improvise is right, especially when you're exposed to winter on Cape Cod. Turtle's lost a few friends to the cold this past year.
And the snow had covered them over and they froze to death. It's brutal. It really is. No joke. In the wintertime, I stay in front of Bay Bridge or I find like alleys or I stay at the train station in the old abandoned trains. We had cleaned one of the trains out, and they had a stove in there. So one night we was cooking eggs, bacon, sausages, 2 o'clock in the morning by lights from the cell phone.
Surviving is tough, but that's also why Turtle feels so close to his friends.
There's a lot of love in homelessness. I never had so many friends in my life, not good friends like I got now. These friends, they know the struggle and they know pain, you know, pain that rich people don't know.
Actually, it can be hard to leave the homeless community because the camaraderie is so strong. Lillian Perry knows. She's been homeless for 18 years, and she's in transitional housing now. Before, she was in a homeless camp in the woods with her partner, Pat, and her cat, Allie Mae.
It was just like one big family. We were all alcoholics and all addicts. We all shared our food. We shared everything. There was a swamp before you could get into the camp. We had a plank that went across. And so much of us, you know, all loaded, you know, all left up. And I can't tell you, well, the time for me, how many times I went in that swamp. And it was nothing but mud. It was like quicksand. And I'd go up to my knees. And then I'd have to holler, help, help, come and get me. I'm in the swamp. It was the funniest thing, but we still talk about it today.
Lillian says everyone had a role to play, whether it was scouting out new sites or gathering cans to make change for alcohol and cigarettes. There were camp rules: no freeloading, always have alcohol to share, and don't bring drama. Lillian says she never felt unsafe, even as a woman. But eventually, she decided to stop drinking and leave the camps. She says she had to. If she didn't, she'd die, either from exposure or the alcohol. Her partner, Pat, went into detox to join her, but...
Monday came and gone, no Pat. Tuesday came and gone, no Pat. I knew something was up. Wednesday came and gone, no Pat. And her mother called me up Thursday morning and said, I have bad news. I knew right off the bat. She had died from an alcohol overdose after being sober for 3 or 4 days. She literally drank herself to death. And it's hard because we loved each other an awful, awful lot. We were always together 24/7. That's how much we cared for each other. And there isn't a day that doesn't go by that I don't cry for her. She was my one and only. There'll never, ever be another. Never, as long as I live. But I go on.
Lillian lost both the life she knew and the woman she loved. It cost her a lot to be where she is now. She's at Elise House, a sort of stepping stone between the streets and permanent housing. She misses things about the homeless camps, but doesn't think she could survive that again. She knows she wants to stay on the Cape, though. It's the only home she's ever known. In fact, she says she's only been over the bridge once in her life.
Everything that I want and need has always been between P-Town and Falmouth.
In the end, Beau, Turtle, and Lillian all call Hyannis home. But it's a different Hyannis that only a few see. And now that they've shown me, I know that people can live in the same space, but in different worlds. In Hyannis, Massachusetts, I'm Lucy Kang.
Cape Cod is a popular place to retire, but for 75-year-old actress and playwright Linda Sterner, moving to Truro was a chance to start anew. She, along with playwright Jim Daglish, has written one of the most personal plays of her career, and it's helped her confront the fear of aging. Justine Yan has the story.
Linda Sterner is on her way to rehearsal. She's been thinking about her future.
When you're my age, and I'm 75, that you're closer to death. And you're closer to, you feel very vulnerable to growing old and being not able to take care of yourself. And that's a big fear.
Linda lost her husband in 2001. When her son passed away 8 years later, she had a hard time moving forward, and she needed a retreat. So in 2010, she sold her longtime Manhattan apartment and moved to her summer home in Truro.
I don't think I'd have as much and would have had as much opportunity in New York to be acting all the time as I did here. So that was very appealing. And a lot of it was, well, I could have a whole life here.
It wasn't easy leaving New York after 50 years, and Linda prizes her independence. She broke her ankle a month ago, and she's been using a cane. It was hard dealing with that injury, living on her own.
What happens when I get older and I'm really infirm? What, you know, where does my life go with that?
It was different when she was young. Her first big role out of college was on Broadway. That was in the 60s. Then she had a family and stopped performing for 30 years. It wasn't until she returned to the Cape that she started acting again. The Cape became a kind of salvation for her.
Well, I've been able to write. I have great friends. It's a beautiful place to live. It's paradise in many ways.
She was finally on stage again, and the peace of mind she found on her walks through the dunes gave her the inner quiet she needed to face her fears. So she wrote a play. It's called A Talented Woman.
And the play was my chance to engage again with the world and myself.
Linda plays Maxie, a once glamorous New York City matriarch who's struggling to maintain her identity after suddenly losing everything.
I see Maxie as a woman of enormous energy and vitality and life and fearful of the future, very fearful of the future. I think that's me right now.
How are you?
Tonight's the live reading, and the Kituate Center for the Arts is almost filled to capacity.
I lost my apartment, my husband, and my lover. It has to be someone else's fault, right?
That's Maxie, who's also in her 70s. She's thinking of getting married again.
Maybe I was a little complicit in getting myself into my present predicament. Well, then maybe I should do something about it.
A Talented Woman hasn't been picked up by a producer yet, so there are no frills to this reading. No set, no costumes, just the actors sitting in the chairs side by side with music stands in front of them, holding white binders with the script. But this audience doesn't seem to mind. Most are around Linda's age.
There are a lot of Maxies. You think you're leading one life, and you lead it, and it goes on and on and on, and all of a sudden, it's over. And you have to reinvent yourself.
A Talented Woman was completed 3 years ago. It's been read at festivals and workshops. It's won awards. And with each performance, Linda's relationship to Maxie has deepened.
How do you become active in your destiny and not just accept the given?
Well, then maybe I should do something about it. I'm not a dinosaur. I can evolve. My family needs me. I'll do anything. I'll bust tables at Le Cirque, slice salami at Zabar's, take a class in accounting. I'm a talented woman, goddammit, and I'm going to make this right if it kills me.
Has Maxie helped you?
Sometimes, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's the push forward, the vitality, the never giving up is wonderful because it's so easy to say, well, I just give up. And that's crazy. You know, that's not something I want to do.
In Kituate, Massachusetts, I'm Justine Yan.
Linda is thinking of writing another play soon. She says it will probably also be about a woman who is dealt a blow, but who goes on to survive and even thrive. This story and Lucy Kang's piece on homelessness were produced as part of the Transom Story Workshop in partnership with Atlantic Public Media. I'm Indy Todd. Thanks for listening.